Hour 2 of The People Show. Satyar Shah, Randeep Janda, Josh Elliott Wolf. If you missed the first hour of the show, you can check it out on the podcast. We dove into the JT Miller interview on the Drop in the Gloves podcast, our takes on what JT had to say. And we also had head coach of the BC Lions and co-GM Rick Campbell on the show. So if you missed it, make sure to check out the first hour of the podcast. And as the show goes on, we have a lot coming up. Don't At Me is coming up this segment. So if you have any submissions, get them in now. 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text inbox. We have the mailbag coming up at 3 o'clock today.
That's right. We got a lot going on.
Yeah,
and,
very busy.
I think we got some fire takes for Don't At Me.
Mm-hmm.
I know I have one. You were teasing one before as well. Bring yours as well.
Yeah.
650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. We love hearing from you. We love your fire takes. Some of them are wrong. But we don't say they're wrong, because in Don't At Me, we can't at you.
No, we can't at you. You say that's your just, take.
Those are the rules.
That's what it is. So we have that coming up. And also, next segment, we'll talk some NFL. But before we do that, we're going to have Amir Tacey join us, Canadian gold medalist in 125 wrestling freestyle. So
yeah,
he's coming up at 2:30 and 1:30.
And shouts to also a lot of those athletes that represented Canada in Birmingham, England as well. 92 medals, third, which was behind England and Australia. So a lot of folks came back with medals, a lot in wrestling as well.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk to Amir, who has been, you know, representing Canada at the highest levels since he was a teenager. He's been grinding, so it's nice to see him get that Commonwealth gold.
Yeah, Canada did really well at the Commonwealth Games, and I think that does kind of show the strength of Canadian athletics at the Olympics. We've seen it at the Winter Olympics and also in the Summer Olympics with our athletes getting more medals and getting stronger and stronger relative to the competition. So that's exciting to see. Looking forward to talking to a former Olympic athlete as well, Amir Tacey. That is coming up at 1:30. Now, we mentioned the JT Miller interview, and coming up in the mailbag, we have questions from people about specific things in the interview. That's why we haven't delved into some of the questions people have about the Elias Pettersson thing with John Scott ripping him and all that sort of stuff.
John Scott does not have an EP40 jersey.
No, he doesn't. There are questions in the mailbag, so we'll address those coming up then for those wondering. But what JT Miller did talk about as well was one teammate of his, and a teammate of his that many a Canuck fans grew to love as the season went on and have a lot of high hopes for, and that is the rookie, 10th overall pick, who had a successful rookie season, Vasily Podkolzin. It seemed like JT Miller, as we've grown accustomed to hearing from Canucks players and managers and coaches, well, let's just say they love the kid.
He's got, like, I mean, unlimited potential. It's crazy. He could be the most powerful skater on the ice, have the most powerful shot on the ice. Very humble young kid. He wants to learn. First guy on, last guy off at the age of whatever, 20, 21. He's physically engaged. He's built like a man already. They're like, the sky's the limit. You know, his biggest thing is the language barrier. And but he's learned a lot, and how much he learned this last year. I sit next to him in the room and I'm constantly busting him up. And he's just a great kid, and not one guy doesn't like being around him. And, you know, like I think everybody feels the same way. I mean, he's just a little more opportunity, a little more understanding of the small ice and I think just being around the English language a little more, this guy's going to be an unbelievable player. And I don't know what the top end is, but I think it's really high, and I think he's going to score a lot of goals.
That is Canucks forward JT Miller on the Dropping the Gloves podcast, talking about one Vasily Podkolzin, who had 14 goals and 26 points in his rookie season. And I think we all agree, played some of his best hockey as the season went on, when he grew more confident and got a lot better, it seemed like. And just the way JT talked about him, the sky being the limit, but also just how much they really like the kid.
Yeah, and, you know, anybody you talk to around the team, and JT's mentioned it numerous times himself, but the fact that you continue to hear this, the fact that when you talk to other Russian players, and we heard, you know, even Kuzmenko, and one of the reasons that he ended up, that transition was made easier by a young player who had his first season in the NHL, he feels like, and don't get me wrong, there's still a long way to go. He's going to be, you know, a much better player as time goes on. But he still feels like that quick turnaround of trying to figure out North America and trying to figure out the NHL game. And yes, there were ups and downs. We saw it. We saw his confidence being completely shot at one point of the year. And Bruce Boudreau mentioned that. The way he ended it, Sat, He just felt like he matured in front of our eyes. And there's a long way to go still. Yeah. He's still a young guy. But that kind of steady climb over the last two or three months of the season, that was impressive. And that tells you about a young kid's maturity. And when he focuses and when he's able to be the guy that puts in the work, because that's what he does at practice, he also got the benefits of that as well. And other guys on that team, whether they're 28, 29, 32, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They notice.
No, and the thing that stands out about him, the reason people like him so much, not just because he's a good kid, he works so hard, he's got a really high hockey IQ. Very smart hockey player. And that's why, I mean, I wonder, you know, as much as we're going to talk about some breakout players because I think he fits in. And I think for Vancouver, considering they have a few second and third year players on the team, Kuzmenko coming in, they'll have a rookie in the back end and Rathmel. There's a few interesting guys that could be potential breakout candidates. We'll see if any of them do, but potential ones. And one reason why I put Colson is interesting is, like we said, at the end of the year, he played a lot better. How much better can he get this upcoming season? But I'd say given his age and given, you know, where he's trending, like 3 or 4 years from now, that's what I'm really excited about seeing in him. Because let's not forget, he actually grew an inch or two over the course of the past offseason. Like, he's now over 6 feet. He's like 6'1", closer to 6'2 now in his size. I mean, he's pushing 200 pounds, and he's going to be a bit stronger next season. And what really impresses me outside of his great talent is just the physical gifts he has.
Yep.
The fact that you see he can get to the net, that's not an easy, he can bend his knee and dip his shoulder and get to the net. That's not an easy thing. Like, you need to have athleticism to be as strong as he is, as fast as he is, but also be as pliable as he is to be able to dip and get to the net the way he does. That shows a lot of athleticism, but just his hockey IQ, man. And you see it really when he's playing defensively, what lanes to take away, yep, where to position himself. Sometimes you see him do things where nobody would notice it, but he just took a lane away just by simply just moving over 2 feet. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Putting his stick in the right spot. Or jump sometimes just kind of showing pressure to a guy, which forces a guy to pass the puck. There's so many little things he does when he doesn't have the puck where you look at it and you're like, you especially see it when you're watching him at home and you're at the arena up top watching him play. He's a very smart hockey player.
Yeah, he doesn't waste that many calories. Let's put it that way. There's always smarts and there's always a thought behind the move that he's making or the play that he's taking. And what I like about all of those things, but even beyond that, when you talk about just getting physically bigger and physically more mature, we saw it in stretches when he was, you know, increasing that confidence as the season went on. He wasn't shying away from moments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talk about physically being able to go to the net, but mentally, that also requires you to think a certain way.
Yeah.
And some players, they shy away from it. You know, the perimeter game is what they kind of, especially early on in their careers, they'll kind of shy away from that contact. They'll shy away from that danger zone. Physically, he can get there, but mentally, I like the fact that he doesn't shy away from those engagements,
yeah,
whether they're even after the whistles. That's an important mindset, because the way that he maps out, he's not going to be an 80-point guy in this league. But if he can give you 50 points, if he can give you something, you know, that you look at and say, he plays a certain way and he gets you some,
yeah,
points. I look at that third line this year, and, you know, whether it's Mikheyev on the opposite wing and maybe Podkolzin's playing on that left side, don't know who the center will be, but that to me is a fast, physical, in-your-face line that's going to pose some problems for opposing defensemen, opposing forwards, and as time goes on, as you mentioned, in 3 or 4 years, he should be a beast. But even this year, if you pair him with the right winger and there's that mentality of, hey, this third line, if that's the third line, this is your MO, motor,
yeah,
speed, physicality, smarts, go do your thing. I think that's an exciting proposition because of Podkolzin, and hopefully if that's Mikheyev on the other side, that makes for a very, very interesting line.
This is going to sound like a cop-out as terms of his projections, because I listened to what you said about maybe not an 80-point guy,
yeah,
and probably in the 50-point range, but brings a lot of attributes. And I completely agree with everything he brings. And that's kind of the projection we had of him in his draft year. Remember, we said, okay,
yep,
he's probably not going to be a guy based on what he's shown so far who's going to be a point-per-game player. But if he can bring everything he's capable of and score 40, 50 points per year, that's a really important, valuable player to have. And I'm not saying he's going to be a point-per-game player, Randy, but what I'm doing is I am removing any ceiling or limitations on Vasily Podkolzin.
Yeah.
And the reason I do that, and it's not to say, this is why I say it's a bit of a cop-out, it's because I'm starting to wipe the slate clean a little bit based on the type of player he may be. Because one of the things that he was projected as, when we talked about that projection coming in, was not going to be a goal scorer, maybe. He hasn't shown the goal scoring ability.
Yeah, the shot maybe is not there.
Yeah, but he's a really good playmaker and distributor. It's not a great finisher. Well, what did he show more than anything was his finishing ability.
And what do his teammates talk about? That shot.
So, and one player that he's been compared to before is Barbashev, who's kind of similar build, really good scorer too. Not going to be a guy who's probably score 80 points, but could get 50, 60, but can maybe score 30 goals in a year. But here's what I wonder. And this is why I'm not going to project anything, but I'm leaving it more open to maybe it is more than the 40, 50 point potential. Because let's open the door to a greater possibility and maybe an optimistic outlook. If he scores 14 goals as a rookie, and his shot is as good as the players say it is. If he has the capability of scoring 25 to 30 goals in a season, that means he should be capable of having a season of 60 or 70 more points. Because if you're a 30-goal scorer, you're probably getting at least 20, 30 assists to go alongside of it. So my question does ultimately come down to, is he a higher-end goal scorer? Is he a guy capable of scoring a lot of goals? Because if he is a guy that can consistently score 25-plus goals, well, then maybe the limitations we may have set on a ceiling shouldn't be there.
Yeah, the 50-point thing, I think, is, to your point, probably something that we brought in the rookie season.
Yeah.
Now you have to recalibrate a little bit, right?
You wonder.
You do wonder, and I'm willing to actually push that further up a little bit because 14 goals in 79 games doesn't seem like, wow, he's lighting the world on fire. But I think there was an element of the first couple of months, we saw it, there were struggles. And then when he got hot and when things started to go, the goal started coming. So if you can stay on that same level of confidence for majority of a season, you know, yeah, we've seen certain tendencies. And that shot, he was picking corners, man.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't muffins at the the logo. There weren't Taylor Pye at specials.
No.
These were picking corners and, you know, leaning into that shot. So that 50 point, I think that is probably a safe projection. But yeah, I'm willing to push it up a little bit more. And you know, some of these projections, it's interesting because when you start thinking of players that bring that physical element that are maybe prototypes, right? And when I think of a physical player, physically engaging, has been in that 50 to 60 point range in his career, an absolute pain in the rear end to play against in the playoffs when he's healthy. Like TJ Oshie to me is a player that I look at and say, probably going to give you around 25 to 26 goals. I think his career high was around 26.
I think he may have 31 a year, I think. Yeah.
There are,
I think those guys can
33,
hit...
33, sorry.
He can hit 30 in a year or two. If you're a 25-plus goal scorer, you're going to have a year or two where you hit 30 goals.
Exactly. But you're generally in that range of 25 to 30.
Yeah.
But you're putting up 60 points. But you play the game hard and you play it smart. I think that's where he's not going to be necessarily maybe a driving force on the team. But is he probably your fourth or fifth most like important wing forward?
He could,
very, very well could be.
Well, if we start looking at guys who could break out from the Vancouver Canucks, let's start with Vasily Podkolzin. The reason why he's a really intriguing breakout candidate is because, let's say, if JT Miller gets traded, and we'll get to Kuzmenko, but a guy who could fit that role with the left-hand shot coming downhill in that role and also a good playmaker, can play off the half wall that way, Vasily Podkolzin could do that. So if you wonder who could be the best replacement for JT long-term for this team, is Vasily Podkolzin, I think. You know, like, you look at the projections and the profile, there are some similarities to the types of players that both of these guys are. So I think that's an intriguing bet long-term. But what limits his production potentially this upcoming season, because I can see it being twofold. I can see him playing, actually, in a top-six role, because I thought him and Pettersson showed some really good chemistry. And if you can use Podkolzin with a role with Pettersson and they have success, that means you can save somebody else for another one of those guys. So if Podkolzin can legitimately play along Pettersson this season, I think that solves a lot of things to this forward group, which is already pretty good when you look at it. So I think he can provide a lot of even strength scoring, but I wonder what his ceiling is on the power play this year. Because even if JT gets let go, I would guess Kuzmenko probably gets the first call to get the chance.
Yeah.
So as much as this upcoming year, I think, is going to give us another indication, we'll see a bit more from him, but I don't think it's going to be his big breakout year offensively yet. Maybe he gets 20 goals, maybe he gets 40 points or something like that, you know what I mean? But I think that could be a really solid year for him, but I'm just not sure he's going to get the power play time this year for him to break out in a big way in his sophomore season.
I look at it this way, and this year, I feel like he's going to get a lot more five-on-five leash.
Yes.
Where last year, it was kind of touch and go, where you're saying, okay, if you got the confidence, we're going to look at you. If not, then there's going to be some moments where you might not be getting much ice time. I feel like this year, 5-on-5, that leash will be there because that look at the forward group that they have right now, right? if Pettersson is playing on the wing to start off the year, let's say JT down the middle, Bo second line, and then maybe Dickinson, Lazar. Let's just say that's the way they go, but they want to pop Elias Pettersson out on the wing. Hypothetically, let's just say that's the case. You got a lot of wingers. A lot of wingers competing for top six spots. Now, if you choose to go three high-end centers and spread out the love a little bit, then you've got that opportunity of, all right, Petey and Pod Colson, or maybe him playing with a more skilled center.
I think that's the way this should. If you're coming into next season with Miller, Pettersson, and Horvat on the roster, you got to go them down the middle.
Well, you have the wingers now, right?
You have to. You have enough wingers because right now, the way it lines up, like if you want to be idealistic, and this is where Nils Höglander is also a potential breakout candidate for Vancouver. He's probably not going to get the power play time, but even strength time.
Yes.
Does he play a top nine role, or does he play on the fourth line? If he gets to the fourth line, that's when you wonder if he gets healthy scratched with Boudreaux. That's where Dakota Joshua kind of comes in. Because, you know, Dickinson, if you go Pettersson, Miller, Besser down the middle, Pettersson, Miller, Horvat down the middle, and you go to Lazar in your fourth line, that means one wing spot's going to Dickinson. And then the other wing spot is either going to be Nils Höglander on the fourth line. I think what a lot of fans want to see is Tanner Pearson on that fourth line. Have Pearson with Lazar and Dickinson, which is really a third line masquerading as a fourth line, which makes it really strong. But that would mean that you could put Nils Höglander with one of your top three centers. That means he's in a more of an offensive role. The question comes down to, does Nils Höglander gain the confidence of the head coach? Because if you go with those four centers, the Canucks can be very similar to the way the Blues forward group was last year. They had nine forwards to score 20 or more goals. Now, I don't know if Vancouver's going to have nine forwards scoring 20 or more goals, but the reason they had that was because they had three centers down the middle and they had six wingers that were good. And so when you have that, you can do it. So the Canucks can have that style, but it comes down to Nils Höglander. So I think Kuzmenko is an interesting one. Podkolzin, I think, can play that role. But for the Canucks to really be able to put out three higher octane lines, and it does have to come down to Nils Höglander taking that step.
And it does guard you or protect you from having to play Jason Dickinson down the middle, which he didn't look good last year, right? So he was better as a winger, so that does give you that option on the fourth line. You can do that. Now, I think, you know, if you look at that, you also got these wingers playing with high skill guys, three lines deep. And that's really, really important to your point about adding that depth. In terms of other breakout players, and you mentioned Kuzmenko, I think Kuzmenko, and one of the things, in talking to Daniel Bachner, who's an assistant coach out at SKA and was the coach for Pod Colson, was the coach for Kuzmenko as well, worked on the Russian youth teams, his point was, the reason I think Kuzmenko can work in the NHL is, once again, that shot.
Yeah.
Now, we can't predict what he's going to do in the NHL. We're going to have to wait and see. People that have coached him in the KHL, they see what he can do on a daily basis, but until he actually hits the NHL, you know, that's kind of the big question mark. But in regards to power play, when you're talking about a great replacement, like if you see the tape of him playing in the KHL, he's owning that side. Got a solid shot where JT Miller plays on that side, and also playmaking from not only that side, but a little bit further down as well, near the goal mouth and near the goal crease and all of that. Like he's in a position that he can play both of those positions, but where is he most dangerous from? He was dangerous with that shot, just on that JT Miller side where he's able to play that. So a lot of this has to do with, is JT Miller playing there? Is JT Miller a part of the Vancouver Canucks? But I think from a power play perspective, I don't know about his full 200-foot game. We're going to have to, that's the big question mark when it comes to Kuzmenko. But if you're looking at a guy piling up points, especially if he gets power play one opportunity at some point in time, he's a breakout to a certain degree. I don't think he's going to wow the NHL, especially early on. But when you're talking about what can make a difference, his shot can make a difference. It's just a matter of, can the rest of his game match what we'll see in the offensive side?
And he's a guy that you might have to be patient with for the first few weeks, a month of the season, as he gets acclimatized to the NHL size rink and how fast the game is. And there's a adjustment period to go through. So it might be some rough waters early on for him, but then he may figure it out afterwards. But you're right about, ultimately, for him to break out, it comes down to power play time. And for the Canucks, when you look at what they did this offseason, they set themselves up, not to the point where they're going to be as good without JT Miller, but instead of replacing one player that's like JT Miller on the roster, they've added two players that give you certain similar elements. What does Ilya Mikheyev give you? He gives you some size. He gives you some two-way ability. He gives you some speed. Miller's a good skater. Mikheyev's a faster skater. He can play on the PK. So all of a sudden, he provides certain elements that JT Miller exhibits, but he's also even better defensively. So now you have a guy that can give you something that JT Miller also gives you, even better in that side, despite not being as good offensively. Kuzmenko is not going to be as good at 5-on-5. He's not going to be the same amount of the same beast. But if JT's not here, he can easily step into JT Miller's role on the power play. And if he has success, the power play can click at the same efficiency potentially because you have other good players. So the way it slots in, the Canucks with the moves they've made, they've given themselves a chance to cover JT Miller if they have to trade him at some point or if they end up trading him in training camp early in the season or whatever it is. And even if they don't get anything to the roster up front in his replacement and that's futures or whatever, they have enough forwards now to at least fill the spot. You don't fill the player, but you have a guy that can at least somewhat potentially replicate the production on the power play. You have a two-way profile that can play on the PK in that role, can play a two-way role in that role, can match up in that role. So you're giving yourself a chance here to at least cover the spot you need to cover if he's not on the roster.
By committee, right? Because when you think of replacing a 99-point player, if it gets to that, it's very daunting. There's very few of those guys in the league, so it's not going to happen. How do you make that happen on, you know, I would say in all situations? JT Miller mentioned yesterday what he loves about playing in Vancouver is that he's on the ice a lot. On the PK, Mikheyev's there to your point, 5-on-5, Mikheyev's there to the point, and Kuzmenko, power play. So that's why you look at it, and if JT's a part of the team, whether it's, for the entire year, obviously the situation changes. The breakout player, it may not happen to the same degree. But if he's not on the team, then all of a sudden, there's going to be opportunities for these guys to break out.
Yeah, there will be opportunities. A lot of reaction coming in here. Tim and Eastvan, Pettersson, Miller, Besser, Pearson, Horvat, Garland, Mikheyev, Podkolzin, Kuzmenko. That's my top nine. This one, Jim and I believe in Hoglander. Top six, maybe not. Top nine, yes. Is that Patrick Alvin texting
in? It might be.
Might be. Maybe it is. Maybe he's listening and texting in.
Yeah, list that number down.
Marcus and Gibson's Vasily is a derivative of the name Basil, which should make him a Reach's favorite player. Basil?
Okay. Is he a big Basil guy? Or I know he hates cilantro.
He does? He says too much cilantro. He doesn't know what to do with it. Yeah. Too much cilantro.
Never invited to my house for dinner.
That's what happens. That's how you get yourself kicked out. And Minor Matt says, did anything happen with JT Miller while I wasn't paying attention? No, he did an interview on the Drop in the Gloves podcast. We reacted to that. He talked about Vasily Podkolzin, who we played back a clip from. And if you missed the first hour of the show, check it out on the podcast. We played back some of those clips. All right. It is time to get to Don't At Me. So get those submissions in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And Don't At Me is brought to you by LeaseBusters. Get out of your vehicle lease with ease, confidence, and a LeaseBusters leasing specialist to guide you through the journey. Go to LeaseBusters.com to start the process today. Let's get Don't At Me going.
Your takes uninterrupted. Don't At Me. Text in your submissions to 650-650.
Don't At Me. I said what I said.
It is Don't At Me. And Randy, do you want to get the proceedings going or should I get them going?
You know what? I'll start it off today because this one's been bothering me for the last couple of days.
All right, get it off your chest.
Don't At Me. Aaron Judge's home run chase is very impressive.
Yeah.
Could set the Yankees record. But Barry Bonds is the real home run king and his record is the real record.
Ooh.
That's the truth. Yep. Whatever you think of the history, I just want to remind you, Major League Baseball was complicit in everything.
Yeah.
They welcomed it.
They were.
Bud Selig was sitting there eating popcorn just like you and me.
Yes.
So this whole idea of rewriting the record books, at the time, Major League Baseball said it was fine, and I'm okay with that. We just look back at that part of history differently. His record is still the real record. Judge is my boy. But that's my take.
All right. I'm not going to at you. Because it is Don't At Me. You're allowed to have that take. I know Josh seems like he wants to at you, though.
No, I agree.
You agree? I agree. I'm with. I've been like that, too, because I mean, I'm with you, though. Baseball, Bud Selig, when they act like, oh, this is such a horrible thing, keep these guys out of the Hall of Fame, it's like, screw you. Yeah. You guys let that happen. You look the other way. You profited off the steroid era, and now you're trying to revise history and act all shocked and clutch your pearls and keep guys out of the Hall of Fame? Shame on you.
You know what Major League Baseball was doing when that was going on? You know those scenes in, like, Narcos when they have the money counters and everything in those rooms where off their drug proceeds? That's what Major League Baseball was doing when...
Printing money.
They were printing money, and then guess what? When they're done printing money and counting money, then they clutch their pearls.
Yes.
Give me a break.
Yeah. Completely disingenuous. I'm with you. All right. Don't at me. We'll stick with baseball. I love the Harry Carey hologram in the Field of Dreams game. Loved it. Thought it was fantastic.
So gross.
Terrific.
It was weird. It was weird, man.
It's a Hall of Fame game. I mean, sorry. It's a Field of Dreams game. And what is a Field of Dreams game? It's based on a movie. What is a movie based on? Ghosts. They brought, like, you know what I mean? Like, it fit the theme.
Okay, but, like, holograms in general, how about we just let the dead lie?
Dead.
Like, just stay dead, man. Like, everybody assumes I love the Tupac hologram because I'm a huge Tupac fan. I actually don't.
You weren't a fan?
I wasn't a fan of it. Like, it was, wow, they actually did it at Coachella in 2012, but holograms kind of freak me out.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, just, you can do something tasteful. You could have it be the audio of Harry Carey. I mean, and maybe have his picture on the screen somewhere, but having a hologram of him is weird.
I thought it was great.
The Harry Carey hologram kind of looked like Robert De Niro in the Irishman.
He looked good. He looked good.
I don't need any ghouls in my baseball game.
Ghouls?
It's Harry Carey.
Ghosts.
All right, we got a lot coming in here. This one from Greasy Troll. Don't at me. Barry Bonds hit more than half his dingers not on the juice.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, but I mean, we're talking about the single season record.
We're talking about 73.
Yeah, and Barry Bonds never only surpassed 50 home runs in a season once, and that was the year he hit 73. I mean, he hit like 49 one year, hit 40s a bunch. Like, he's incredible.
He was a Hall of Famer before he allegedly started using stuff, but the fact is...
You could say he was a Hall of Famer based on how he played with the Pirates.
Yep. But the point is... Baseball, you can't go back and rewrite the record books because baseball, the league, was all a part of it. In a way, they were actually encouraging it.
They were. They totally encouraged it. All right, a lot of Don't At Me submissions coming in here to our text inbox. Don't At Me, with or without JT Miller, we make the playoffs. That's Jason and North Van.
With or without?
With or without.
Okay, so he is all in.
Yeah.
All in. We got this one. I think a lot of people, me and you, will agree with this. Don't At Me, but all this talk about Seattle getting an NBA team makes me realize Vancouver badly needs one again. We have the fan base, and there are players like Brandon Clark who are born in Vancouver.
Ah.
Okay, you're going to get a lot of support with that text. You know what we need? You know what we need in this city to actually bring an NBA team back? Money,
yes.
Who's got an extra billion or two laying around?
You probably need three.
Don't at me. Well, same situation, but don't at me. Vancouver would have more success with a Major League Baseball team. An NBA team.
Success getting one or success having one?
Yeah. Success having one.
Really?
Assuming everything is in place, I think baseball would be more successful. Or at least equal.
I'm not going to at you, but Josh, I disagree.
It's don't at me. You're allowed to have the takes. It's all right. Jeffro, don't at me. Mariners have the easiest schedule out of all the wildcard teams going down the stretch.
Watch out, Blue Jays. Watch out.
The Jays play the Orioles a lot, but the Orioles decided they were good, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's the problem. They're also chasing the Blue Jays in the standings. This unsigned text, put your name on it. Don't at me. JT Miller is the face of the franchise.
Ooh.
So didn't John Scott say that in the interview as well? You're the face of the franchise?
That's what he said. I don't think...
JT didn't disagree.
JT didn't.
I might bump up my annual average a little bit.
That's good. Give me some more money. Snoop the Dog. Don't at me, JT Miller was dealt to the Islanders at the draft. Rutherford is just holding on to filing the deal until his offseason moves are complete. Could Romanov be part of the return? Snoop the Dog. Is that a question or don't at me?
I don't know. Could you imagine if Lou and Jim Rutherford are just like, you know what? Let's hold off this. Let's play with the NHL.
Don't at me, but the person that said baseball would do better in this city than basketball should stay off the weed. That's James in Richmond.
Equal to.
Equal.
It is Friday.
Also... Who's going to an NBA game during the hockey season? Like, hockey is going to... The reason I would say baseball would do better is because it offsets with the Canucks.
You know why, though? You know why? You know who'd go? basketball fans in this city. There's a lot of them. There's a lot.
And you know what? A lot of basketball fans are not hockey fans. The cross-section
is... There's not a lot of overlap.
There isn't a ton of overlap. And I would say this. The Grizzlies' attendance was never bad. Grizzlies never had bad attendance at the time, GM Place.
Their owner was bad.
The owner was bad. The team was bad. Attendance wasn't bad. The last year, sure, there's some games that had 14,000 or whatever, 15th. But generally, they averaged like 16,000, 17,000. It was never empty. I never went to a Grizzlies game and said, oh, there's less than 10,000 fans in here. That never happened at a Grizzlies game that I remember being at. It was, I think people forget. At the games, the vibe was good. People showed up. The attendance was actually, they averaged higher attendance in Vancouver than they currently do in Memphis.
Fans stopped attending once they knew the team was leaving.
And even then, yeah. they still sold out the last couple of games because fans still showed up for the last couple of games. Anyways, I digress.
We're adding
We're
you.
Late.
We're adding
late.
You.
I'm
Josh.
Adding you. I'm mad. I love basketball. Anyways, we'll leave it at that. We have more coming up next right here on the Home of Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650. People show rolls on Sportsnet 650. Sat with Randy, Josh producing. Special guest coming up.
That's right.
Olympic athlete, Canadian freestyle wrestler, Amer Tacey is coming up in a matter of moments.
Gold medalist at the 125 kg class from Surrey, BC. And honestly, I look back at my career in media. So I started working at Omni TV behind the scenes.
Yeah.
2010.
2010.
And I remember one of our reporters, Surinder Jal, who lives in Surrey to this day, mm-hmm. He did a story on a couple of brothers that wrestled way back when. And I'm talking probably, this must be 2012, 2013. And one of those brothers was Amer Tacey. Mm. And the reporter told me, hey, watch these guys. They're going to be good. They're going to be good. Scholarships end up happening. They do their thing south of the border. And now we're going to talk to Amer in a couple of seconds here. He goes from being a really good youth-level wrestler in the community, mm-hmm. wrestling for clubs. You know, his dad, also a wrestler back in the day as well. You know, he's got that family lineage. But representing Canada in 2020 at the Olympics is one thing. And he's been doing that, you know, Pan Am Wrestling Championships. He won gold there. Goes to Birmingham in the UK this past week and ends up winning a gold medal. So that journey, just a really cool journey from a mm-hmm. local kid that grew up, kind of went away from Surrey to do his thing as well, but representing not only his country, but representing his city at the highest level. Really awesome to see him come back victorious as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the fact that it seems like getting even better and better at this stage, winning a gold medal at this. I mean, it seems like he's starting to enter his prime mm-hmm. in this sport. And with the 2024 Summer Olympics coming up, you know, a medal hopeful for team for Canada.
Hey, this is we're gonna have him on here in a little bit here. What's next is a part of that question, but looking forward to that conversation, which we're gonna have right now.
Well, let's welcome him in. Amer Tacey now joins us on the show. Amer, man, how you doing? How are you enjoying summer so far?
Summer's great. How can you not love this weather out here? Thanks for bringing me on the show today. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, Amer. It's good to chat with you again. I was just talking about, you know, maybe 10 years ago. Surinder Jal, who you know yep. through the wrestling community, he did a profile on you and your brother, and that's how you kind of came on the radar for me personally. But now, you know, long time, 10 years ago, but now all of a sudden, here you are, you know, Olympian, repping Canada, not only repping Canada, gold medalist at the Commonwealth Games. Just, you know, what's that feeling like, you know, for the last week or so where you've been on cloud nine?
Yeah, I mean, first off, 10 years later, I feel pretty old now.
Yeah, but, yeah, welcome to the club, man.
No, it feels great. You know, it's always a good thing when you bring home a gold for your country and your family and your friends and your community. So it's felt amazing, and I've been getting a lot of love from everybody. So how can you not love it?
No, absolutely. And, you know, you deserve it as well because, you know, as we know, it's a journey. And your journey hasn't been necessarily the easiest one either. There's injuries when you were coming up, going back about 8 years, you know, and also just having the struggle of day to day, whether it's, you know, working your way through the system. It just, when you have a chance to kind of settle down and say, I've repped my country at the Olympics, I've won a gold now as well. Do you have that moment? You're still a young guy, 26. It's prime of life as far as I'm concerned. Do you have that moment when you sit back and say, it's pretty awesome to do what I do?
For sure. More than I've been doing it lately. more just because I feel like I'm just being older. But for sure, I mean, we like to say sacrifice is massive in for success, but there's levels to it, and I feel like I've achieved like that extreme sacrifice where you like you said, the last 10 years have been difficult times and the struggle with injuries and being away from family, but it all pays off at the end, and I'm grateful for that.
Do you feel like with the way you're trending at this point, at the age of 26, everything you've learned, and now, I mean, you win a gold medal at the Pan American Wrestling Championships, you win a gold medal at the Commonwealth Games, I mean, we're a couple of years from the Summer Olympic Games. I mean, how big of a goal is that to not only just get to the Olympics where you also were in 2020, but this time coming away with a medal?
Yeah, I mean, it's massive. You know, I was just talking to my father this morning, and he was showing me, you know, my dad loves collecting my awards, so I always send them back home when I get a chance, but he was showing me how he has them all lined up, and there's two medals missing. One's the World Championship medal, and the one's from the Olympic Games, so hopefully we can accomplish that in the next few years.
Well, let's talk about your dad, though. Belvitis, who I know going back because of, you know, kabaddi tournaments and wrestling tournaments, if you're a part of the community, you've run into him at some point, family connections, or just, you know, meeting him through connections. How is that moment of sharing that experience with your dad, who's obviously, you know, for listeners that may not know, a wrestler himself, has a history himself, has won. What was that moment like for you?
It was amazing. You know, I look up to him a lot. How can you not? You know, he sacrificed his whole life for others. So I mean, it's an amazing thing when I can go out there and do something that makes him proud. So we were just talking about it the other day. You know, God has blessed us with so much. So we're always grateful.
So I got to say, you know, watching the images come through from Birmingham and all of that, that was so cool to see you win because you're a local guy, but a pretty special moment. So there you are winning gold. The three others on the podium, as a Punjabi Canadian, it was a really proud moment because from four different countries, but there are Punjabis representing their respective country, whether it's India, Pakistan, or the UK, or in your case, Canada. What did that moment mean for you? Just you rep Canada, but you also are a proud Punjabi.
Yeah, I mean it was a historic moment, I'd say for sure. Not just in Commonwealth, but in the entire world of wrestling and sport. Maybe honestly, like when's the last time you had four Indian mm-hmm. Punjabi men standing on a podium together, all with old medals? I mean, and just going 1, 2, 3. So I mean, it's amazing, and it's bigger. It's much bigger than my gold. So. I'm really proud for the other guys and the achievement that we did.
Well, because it goes such a long way, right? I mean, it's representation. I know Randeep and I have talked about this in the past as well. I mean, we looked at broadcasters growing up as well that share the same skin color as we do. And it makes us think, you know, hey, maybe we can do this as well. Maybe, you know, there's a chance for us to make headway into that kind of a role as well. And for you with wrestling and stuff like that, you start seeing, you know, more Indo-Canadian young athletes getting involved in wrestling. What does that mean to you, and do you see the impact when you kind of come back in the community and see younger people want to try out the sport?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, I love that you said that, just because I say that all the time. I mean, I'm so grateful for the people that came before me, because they paved the way, they opened doors for me, and I wouldn't be here without them. And I'm hoping I can do the same for the younger generation, and I hope I have been doing the same. So I mean, every generation is better than the last in for wrestling. So I mean, I'm excited to see what's next and what's coming forward.
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by Amartya Sen, gold medalist at the Commonwealth Games, just a week into that reign as well, which is must be a good thing. You're a proud Canadian, you're a proud Punjabi, but you're also a proud citizen of Surrey. And you know, this is a positive story. We hear a lot of negative when it comes to certain communities across the Lower Mainland. You're a positive story. What does that mean to you when you rep the city of Surrey on the international level? And, you know, just being able to you know, be a representation of Surrey.
Yeah, I mean, I say it all the time. I love this city. I love Surrey. You know, and I know some people don't feel the same, but I love Surrey. It's a great place to live, and I'm glad I could represent my community and where I come from. And especially with everything going on nowadays, I mean, I feel like we need more positive athletes or just role models in general, just for the generation coming up to look forward to, and that there's another road, there's another path that you can follow and achieve greatness.
And you're helping to pave that as well. Okay, so what's next for Amartya Sen? What's you've got the gold around your neck. You're obviously, I know we talked Olympics a little bit, you know, later on as well in a couple of years' time, but what's that next goal for you?
Yeah, I mean, when I set up my plan for 2022, it went Pan American champion, national champion, Commonwealth Games champion, and a world champion. So I got 5 weeks until the world championships left in Serbia. So I'm hoping to notch that off in my belt and fill a spot in my dad's cupboard.
Man, that is fantastic. I wish you all the best with that. I have one question for you because for sure. I know you train a lot. You work really hard. Listen, I like spending time in the gym, nowhere near the level that you guys do. But what's your favorite exercise when you train? Like, what is it you love doing in training? Because you got to love something about training, even though training can suck. There's got to be something you like doing with training.
For sure. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm programmed differently or just mentally just like that or a bit crazy. I feel like I'm a bit crazy to what I do. But I love running.
All right.
You know, I love being tired. I love feeling out of breath, and it's just one of those things that it's always came to me. So.
Okay, so I remember when Surinder was doing that story on you back in the day. I think he mentioned the story of growing up, how much milk you and your brother used to drink on a weekly basis. Or how many liters? How many 4-liter jugs did the Desi family bring in every week?
Oh, dude, I feel so bad for my mom, man. I mean, the trips that she went to Costco and grabbed those, they probably put those signs out at Superstore and stuff, hey, you can only grab two gallons for it, for this family. We probably did that to them. But no, probably quite a bit, probably more than we should have.
Hey, Amrit, this is fantastic stuff, man. We really appreciate your time. Congratulations on all the success. We are proud of the work you're doing. We can't wait to see what you do next. And don't be a stranger. Join us again on the show sometime.
For sure. Thank you guys for having me.
You got it. Amrit Tacey, Canadian medalist and Olympian, and hopefully, like he said, he has two medals he wants to get. One, world championship,
yep.
And second, which is really the holy grail for athletes, that Olympic medal.
Yeah, so he's repped Canada at the Olympics, 125 kg, didn't medal, so that's the next goal, where a couple years' time, can he get back there, and can he make it happen? Like, he's 26, man,
yeah.
So he's got the runway, no question. Pretty cool chatting with him as well, and just... You know, when we're talking about being a show of the community, being a station of the community, I love talking to about stories that this is a guy that the community's seen grow up. And this is an achievement for him, but it's also one for all his supporters, whether it's the local wrestling clubs or, you know, organizations that he not only helped him, but they might be helping, he might be helping them now as well. So awesome to chat with him. We got this one from Jeffro. Surrey's always had the best wrestlers. Remember Daniel Igali? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I believe he's an MP now in Nigeria, but a little interesting note, Sat, about Daniel Igali. He also played, I don't know if you've ever seen the sport or played the sport, kabaddi. It's a South Asian sport.
I haven't played it.
It's great for football players. It actually tests your agility.
Okay,
a lot
yeah.
of crossover athletes
yeah, yeah.
now. So Igali was known as Tufan Singh. He had a nickname in Punjabi because this guy was a legend at kabaddi tournaments. I remember seeing him as well. Nobody could catch him. He was unbelievable. And a couple years later, goes to the Olympics, ends up winning gold medal. And we're like, wait a second. I know that guy. He used to play kabaddi at tournaments. But there you go. Yeah, there's a big overlap, not only
right.
in the wrestling community, but also in the South Asian community.
No, absolutely. And it's really cool to see, right? And you see the influences. You see the success that they're having. And you just see how proud he is as well of the work that he's putting in. And it's really, really cool to see. I saw this text coming in right now from Jimmy from Tawasan. Team BC to represent Canada at the Little League World Series. Yes. Earlier today, the boys from LMLL roll through the round-robin portion of the tournament, and they will represent Canada at the World Series. And it is Little Mountain League, LMLL, out of Vancouver, who capped off an undefeated run at the Nationals in Calgary.
Congrats.
So congratulations to Little Mountain League representing Canada, Team BC. The Little League World Series.
All right, looking forward to that story as well, because you know it's going to be something that's going to get some love as we go here.
Yeah, folks. Absolutely. That's fantastic to see. All right, a lot of fun. And, you know, as far as locally and everything that's concerned, I mean, it's really cool. We talked about the BC Lions today. We talked about their success with Rick Campbell, obviously with Amr too. And, you know, we see the news of the Little League World Series. And as far as some of the other sports that we're kind of keeping an eye on, like on the show today, we have some more stuff coming up here at 2, and then at 2:30, of course, we're going to be talking to Manuel Velth. We'll get into some of the soccer stuff, especially the Whitecaps stuff. The mailbag is coming up at 3. But we have a few minutes here to talk a little bit about the NFL and the NFL preseason, which really the first week of the preseason got going yesterday. More games today, more games over the weekend. And with the way the preseason is set up now, 3 weeks in the NFL, it's really a matter of getting two games in for your players. So the first game, mostly, you're seeing a lot of backups play. But one backup, which was interesting to watch yesterday for the Tennessee Titans, was third-round quarterback, who was taken in this year's draft, Malik Willis, who is very talented but also has a lot of question marks. That's why he was a third-round pick. And considering the fact that a lot of Seahawks fans and a lot of quarterback-needy teams fans kind of were intrigued by him, I was actually interested to watch the highlights and kind of dig into the game last night after I got home between the Tennessee Titans and the Baltimore Ravens to watch Malik Willis.
All right. And, you know, I didn't watch the entire game, but I did watch some, you know, a little bit. And I think the word you want to use from my, you know, watching of it was just solid, right? It wasn't necessarily, you can see what his strengths are. The man, you know, obviously the kid is, he's great with his feet. We know that. He can you know, get away from pressure. He's a dynamic player. But at the same time, I'd like to, and I think Mike Vrabel mentioned this after the game as well, is just he's got to hit his open receivers. So it's a nice start. Like, I don't want to criticize the guy at all because it's the first look you're getting at him in the NFL. There's probably jitters. There's all of this.
Yeah.
So just solid. Like, if we went 6 for 11, you know, he hit almost – but with a little bit more than half of his, you know, his passes, all of that sort of stuff. But to me, it's a good showing, but it's hard, man. After one appearance, like, it's hard to make a sweeping.
Oh, of course. You can't make any real conclusions.
It's a first impression.
Oh, it is. But what I loved about it was you saw some of the flashes. You saw the running ability, of course, and you actually see some of the passing ability. But, man, you also see all the flaws.
Yeah.
Like, when I watch them, and hey, maybe that's the way it's going to be, your first preseason game and first training camp and first mini camps and all that stuff's going through. But I'm like, I'm watching the same guy I watched in college, which excites me and frightens me at the same time. And there's so much about his game that you like, but man, he's so reckless with the decisions that he makes and how he plays the game. So I'm really intrigued to see if he reels it in or not, because if he does, there's a lot to like about him. But man, like, he's one of those guys that is going to drive Tennessee Titans fans probably crazy this year, because he's not going to be the starter.
Yeah.
But he's going to get in sometimes, and fans are going to be really excited by him. And if Tannehill gets injured at any point, I'm really interested to see what he does and how he plays. But that was the first time this entire NFL offseason or training camp so far that I got excited to watch something, and I'm like, oh, this is the same guy I watched in college. Nothing's changed about him.
So, and, you know, in the short term, that's understood. But to your point, in that scenario, just better to season a little bit, right? You hope for a healthy season for Ryan Tannehill. You hope for where he's able to maybe pick his spots. Vrabel's able to bring him in a comfortable situation, or a game's completely out of it where it's a low-stress situation, because those changes, it's more of also the thought process well of when to, you know, the timing, when to hit your receivers, the decision-making, all of that. That ain't going to come overnight.
No,
it's going to take a long time. That's going to take a lot of reps in practice.
If he ever figures it out.
Yeah,
right?
If he does.
Yeah. Now, I did about Tua, who it just seems like Tua can catch a break, whether it's getting injured, whether it's a mess in Miami, and now with all the Brady stuff that happened, a tampering charge with Brady, people asking him about Brady all the time. Like, how do you feel about it? It just seems like Tua never gets that real fresh chance in Miami. He always sees like something is hanging over him, whether it's an injury, whether it was him being injured coming into the year, getting injured playing in the NFL, and then the Flores stuff happening, the organization stuff happening. Like, is it ever going to work in Miami, or is there always something haunting him there?
Well, two things on this. The Miami Dolphins, and I'm a fan, for those of you that don't know, it's a mess of an organization, and it starts at the top with Stephen Ross. It is, and doesn't matter if you're a fan of an organization, when you realize, hey, there's some things wrong, you acknowledge it. And that's what the case is. So organizationally, you can never predict what's going to happen with the Dolphins. That being said, this year, in his third season, I think Tua's dealing with it the right way. Even the whole tampering and those questions that were brought up, he essentially said, hey, that's all noise.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I can't really say anything. I'm here. I think that was the exact thing he said. On the field, and eventually games will tell us the real deal of whether he's good to go or not. But so far, through camp, through, you know, those practice games and all that, the arm strength seems to be there. There seems to be a confidence that he has. So I like what he's bringing thus far. He's got weapons. So really, it's on him this year to improve, to say, you've got one of the best wide receivers in the game in Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
You got Waddle, who is going to be another unbelievable threat. You've got all the pieces. You've got an improved O-line now. You got Teron Armstead handling your blind side. You got an all-pro in that regard. So this is on you to bring the confidence and bring the arm. So I have no problems of between the ears for him. It's just a matter of, is that arm strength, is that going to always be there? Is that confidence in games, in high-pressure situations, is that going to be there?
Yeah.
So far, it's their set, and I don't blame him with all of the noise. That's in the Dolphins organization. He's dealt with it properly right now, but week six, week three, are you still this guy? Are you still exuding confidence? Are you still, you still have that arm? Are you reading defenses the right way? Is your body holding up? Those are questions that only he and his body can answer in the actual season.
I still have a tiny bit of Tua stock still. I still hold a tiny bit of Tua stock because I like Tua coming out.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see this year.
I've been a roller coaster on this. Love the pick. And then first couple of seasons have been up and down. I'm liking it this year. I like the vibe that he's given off.
We'll see how it goes.
We'll see. But like I said,
I root for Tua. I'm just not sure it's going to happen in Miami. I just think that the first sign of any trouble, they're going to pull the rug from under him. That's what it seems like. And I think that's a hard place for him to be really confident for fully. We'll see. We'll see. I wish him the best. I wonder about the organization. But hey, I know all about bad organizations, Randy, just like you do as a Browns fan.
Oh, yeah.
So I understand all of it. All right, a lot of text coming in. We'll try to get to more of those on the other side. And you know what? There are still some massively unresolved issues going on in the world of sport. I mean, in the NFL, the Deshaun Watson thing is massive and it's still unresolved. I mean, you look at the LIV Golf thing that's going on. F1, that's been happening. You look at
players switching left, right, and center.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the transfer seasons going on in soccer, so you see that happening in Euro. You look at JT Miller's situation in Vancouver. But maybe the biggest one, would you say it's still the Kevin Durant one? Unresolved?
Oh, yeah. In terms of star value and not knowing where the star will be next year, it's got to be Kevin Durant.
Okay, we'll delve into the biggest unresolved sports stories and situations, and we'll maybe preview the week two of the Premier League. And also, Tim Hortons is going international. You won't believe which country they're going to and what they have on the menu. We'll talk about that and more right here on Sportsnet 650.